This is CliffCentral.com.
This is the Unview. The thin, the rich, and the fabulous.
The Nathan, the rich, and the fabulous. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. It's Nathan in the building. Nathan, the rich, and the fabulous. I'm in for Alan Ford, who is away, sadly. We're not even going to phone him, I don't think, which is how far away he is. I'm quite excited because today I get to geek out and I get to talk about things that fascinate me without these interruptions about what the show is supposed to be about.
Sorry, can I just interrupt it? I'll interrupt you.
Please do, stranger.
I'm as excited as you are.
What are you excited about?
I'm excited to share a geeky morning with you.
Oh, this is what I like to hear. We are geeks. So, my guest in studio this morning is none other than the amazing, the beautiful. Is it a bird?
No.
Is it a plane?
Couldn't be.
What was the last one?
Is it a thin, emaciated, white individual plummeting to earth?
It is. It's Graham Watkins. Yay. Yes, welcome to studio.
Hey, my buddy. How are you?
You are a superman.
I am only super because I have the world's best sidekick in you in this wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for
having
me.
I'm so excited to geek out with you. So today we are literally geeking out. We recently went to Comic-Con together.
Was it not the best?
Oh, Comic-Con Africa. So now this is the first time Comic-Con has ever come to South Africa. They had a host of amazing celebrity guests that all cancelled. And then they had another round of great celebrity guests.
They had a spaceship that couldn't arrive or leave because of a hurricane, which was exciting in itself.
Yes. I know, I found that funny. So Falcon from the Avengers movie, some of you might know him as that guy with the wings from the Captain America movies. Falcon, he was supposed to come and he was caught in a hurricane, which is quite funny because I think everyone just pictured him in his little wings.
Trying
his hardest.
Flying around.
Yeah, but so he didn't make it, unfortunately. There were a few people that didn't make it. Obviously, Jason Momoa, my absolute favorite because he's playing Aquaman, who is my absolute favorite superhero of all time, couldn't make it. But do you know who they replaced him with? Ragnar Lothbrok from the series Vikings. And I did get to meet him and he complimented my beard.
You did. You actually looked suspiciously like him. It was like you went as Aquaman, but you had a bit of Ragnar in you.
I was like Ragnar, you know, in his later king days. There weren't so many wars and there was a lot more Turkey.
I must say that it saddened me a little bit that he didn't bring his saucy wife, ex-wife. It's cool. I think they're still going to get together, even though he's dead in Valhalla.
If you don't know what we're talking about Vikings. It's an amazing series on it's on Netflix, it's on Showmax, on all those wonderful.
It's on everything. If you haven't watched it, you've missed out.
It is absolutely fantastic. For the ladies, they have Ragnar Lothbrok's eyes, which are just you can melt into them. And for the guys, they have a lot of beheadings and booby shots.
And Lagathas.
Well, we don't see Lagathus.
But we can, in our minds, we do.
Yeah, in every man's mind. Well, anyway, that's going down a very sexist route. So Comic-Con was all about, for those of people who don't know what the heck I'm talking about, Comic-Con is a huge expo, big in America. Yeah. I mean, people go absolutely bonkers for the stuff in the States. I mean, they dress up. I can't actually explain to you the level that these people dress up to, like it's called cosplay, costume play, where people, they spend literally an entire year working on a costume, and they carve it out of all sorts of things. You know, they look so realistic.
There was one guy who was dressed as a predator. You remember from the old Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and quite recently they sort of revived the character again. But like his costume, he said to me that he had made bits of it out of fiberglass, bits of it out of different composites that he had kind of molded by hand, each plate, and like had like this breastplate and the mask, and he must have died from heat exhaustion because it was hard on the day. But I mean, the prize money is just astonishing as well.
In future, see, it's a bit of a catch-22 because you a lot of people dress up like that, where they cover their whole bodies and heads and everything in cut up yoga mat or whatever they use to make their costume.
Yeah.
And it was probably about 70 degrees Celsius on the day.
I would go 75 degrees.
Cheap as it
was hot. 5 degrees.
Everyone was sweating. But then on the flip side, you've got all the anime characters who are so scantily clad.
Yes,
it's almost like it doesn't take long to make a costume.
Well, it is
how hard is it to wrap two strands of wool around your bosoms?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's not that tricky. So, but that's a different sexist topic on anime depictions of women.
But how amazing was it? I went as Doctor Strange and you went as Aquaman. Okay.
Yes.
And you know, we've both been in the public eye before. However, I feel like I had more photographs taken of me as Doctor Strange on the day than I've had in my entire career.
Totally.
And it was a little bit exhausting as well. Like, I know there's a whole like kind of etiquette. People have to ask permission and then they kind of like, they compliment you and they talk about their feelings and how much they love the character. And then you take a photograph, which is exhausting because it took us probably about an hour and a half to walk 100 meters.
Yeah. Oh no.
But it was amazing. I think that the whole event kind of was what I expected, from the event and from for a first time event as well. I think they did really, really well. I mean, I feel like there could have been one or two additions, not improvements, just kind of highlights, if you know what I mean, like kind of activations that were a little bit more interactive and stuff like that. But I think on a whole, the entire event was a success, you know, from a gaming perspective to the obviously the cosplay, to the comic books, to the
it's a good problem to have that it was sold out and it was so packed you could barely move.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great great first thing. I mean, usually it takes years to build up a
this. We had a sort of a weekend pass. We went on the Saturday and the Sunday, and it was just jam-packed both days.
It was amazing. I went to a festival 2 weeks after that, also at Kailami, and it was quite sparse in comparison.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and people don't have money. I mean, you know, the petrol price being what it is, people don't have extra cash to go and dress up like Aquaman for a weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I did, but, you know, I'd been waiting my whole life.
Yeah, we saved up.
We saved up, yeah. We did save up. I don't want to leave you in the lurch, listeners, because I know this is supposed to be a theater and entertainment show, and I know that Alan Ford would be very disappointed in me if I didn't tell you at least what's kind of going down in the theater world. At Joburg Theater, I think it's only showing until tomorrow, there's an awesome production called Bantu, written and directed by Makaola Ndebele, which is the story of Steve Biko. It's a new South African artistic piece inspired by the life and works of Steve Biko. So go check that out if you are a theater lover. That's fantastic. There's also the Nutcracker is coming, which is very relevant to I think the world at the moment. You know, I think a lot of men feel like they can relate to the Nutcracker a little bit. Janice Honeyman's Snow White, the fairest panto in all the land, is coming on the 3rd of November next month, which is exciting. I'm sure Alan's going to organize all of the things. I know that at Monte Cassino as well, Matilda, the Roald Dahl classic, is starting on the 17th, if I'm not mistaken. At Monte Cassino, and that I can't wait to see that. Actually, apparently it's so amazing. They actually in the story she levitates and books go flying and they actually do that. And at one stage Mrs. Trunchbull actually grabs a little child like by the throat and slams it down against the ground, and it's all very like, oh, I don't know how they do it, because surely they can't do that with a real child.
Wow.
You know, discipline hasn't been around since the
50s. Isn't that wonderful when they kind of fool you with illusions and trickery in theatre? It just makes it so much more magical. I actually took my son to go and watch the BFG a few months back in Durban. And just to see how Brian Howells did that. And he kind of like played with scale and the puppetry and it was just so magical watching it from my son's perspective and enjoying theater again. It really is incredible. Hey?
Yeah, you kind of think in a world of like CGI and special effects, like will the old mirror gag or the just, you know, being at different depths of the stage be effective. And it really is. It's so amazing to see. Like,
but I think that, you know, like in most sort of live performance, you kind of have to rely on the audience investing themselves and kind of trusting in what it is you're trying to do. And if they sort of lose themselves and
then you've won.
You've won, yeah. Although I must say HDTV's making it more and more difficult and special effects for people in theater to sort of go there. But once you're in the theater and you're in the space, you can't help but be captivated by what's happening. And there is a beauty in theater, which I love.
I hate that new trend with movies where they I can't even remember how many frames it is. How many frames per second is it that you can put your TV up to that makes every movie look absolute crap?
A bedillion. It actually looks like...
It's like 300 frames per second.
It's like those old B-grade movies from the 80s.
But it's so clear and
crisp. It's clear and crisp.
But in an ugly way.
Yeah.
It's like you feel like you're watching a bad play.
I'm actually watching a series at the moment called Fauda, which is kind of based in this like kind of Middle Eastern terrorism thing.
It's a guy who grew up without a father.
Yeah, yeah, and a mother. It's like it's not really HD or anything like that. It's quite basic, and the camera is, you know, a lot of it's handheld and Steadicam and stuff. But it's so real and so amazing. Actually, I love it more than watching these like kind of $1 billion cameras shooting.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Oh, it's so great, man. And you feel like you're in the action, you know, it's incredible.
Totally. I mean, I must say, like, I love where special effects and everything is going. And soon we don't need that many special effects because drugs are becoming more and more legal.
Yes.
How wonderful is that?
Isn't that a strange thing?
I'd like to just play a song that everyone associates with drugs. and by drugs, I mean marijuana, which is now no longer a drug. I don't know. What is drug a bad word for?
I think it's
not. Is that the illegal word? Well, is it now a pharmaceutical? What is it now?
Well, pharmaceuticals are called drugs, are they not? I think it's narcotics.
Right. Oh, yes. Word, yeah. Okay. So it's no longer a narcotic.
Yes.
Yes, because the narcs are the police that stop you from having it.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So let's celebrate with this fine young dirty haired fellow. Now you don't have to worry about the cops pulling you over and searching that little back pocket of your seat.
Well, I think you still do. I think
because you're only allowed to smoke it at home.
Yeah, there are certain restrictions to having it, but I think it's a process of it becoming more mainstream. It's so weird. Like, I understand that the kind of... you know, the Marijuana Association, their whole argument is, you know, marijuana is less dangerous than alcohol, for example. So, for example, you drink and drive and then all of a sudden, you know, you're incapacitated, your depth perception's gone, your motor skills, everything is inhibited. So, although one could say the same thing about marijuana.
Yes, but you just drive a lot slower. I think when you drink alcohol, you're like, I can go the fastest I can go. But you have no cohort, whereas marijuana will make you go, I am a slow-ass driver. I'm reckless as fuck, but I will, if I hit anything, I probably won't even put a dent in my car because I'm driving 10.
Yes, but I suppose that's because the music, your choice of music changes when...
Yeah.
Like, you were playing Bob Marley.
Yeah, this doesn't make you want to drag
sort
race.
Of makes you want to put your elbow out of the window and just sort
I
of...
put... Hey, put, you want to dust?
You want to dust?
You want to dust?
As opposed to like, you know, really work, as opposed to like 140 BPM, like trance music, that kind of incites a little bit of recklessness.
I think that's a different narcotic altogether. But anyway, have you taken part in the devil's lettuce since the legalization?
Negative.
See, now I have, but I've actually been told by doctors for a long time because I have early onset glaucoma, which is exciting.
Yes.
And we all know that marijuana is used in the treatment of that. And I've had two ophthalmologists tell me that I can give you these eye drops or you can just smoke some grass. And I was kind of like, this is back in the day when it was still very illegal. And
it was still whispered over the pharmaceutical counter.
Yeah. So even though I didn't have, I had permission almost from a medical doctor, I still didn't.
But you know, like,
do it.
I mean, I've got a I'd say at least 10 people in my immediate circle, including some family members, that are using the CBD oil, you know, and those...
I wouldn't use anything from the CBD. It's filthy.
But for those of you who don't know what CBD oil is, it's kind of an extract from, you know, marijuana. It's made from the marijuana. Some of it has THC in it, so some of it has hallucinogenic properties.
And some doesn't. It's like a lucky pack.
It is a lucky pack. Well, you can choose it. Obviously, choose your strength, you know. And, you know, from cancer to arthritis to insomnia to anxiety to anything, really. And these people have changed. I've witnessed it firsthand, you know, from somebody who was the most anxious individual on planet Earth to now being so calm, so in control, so collected, and you, the proof is in the pudding, really. You know, maybe Bob had a thing. Maybe we should just give all the world leaders marijuana and they'll just like cool down a bit, you know?
I have a slight disagreement with you there, just because I've heard that if you have any sort of mental condition, and let's face it, mental illness is rife, you know. Bipolar is everywhere, BPD is everywhere. It's like
you should stay clear.
You should stay clear, because
I've heard that as well.
Marijuana does not help people with depression. I find if anything it'll pop you deeper in that pit, you know.
I agree with you to actually not to an extent. I agree with you wholeheartedly, because it's not a very proactive ingredient in one's life. You know, you can't go, oh, we'll sprinkle a bit of marijuana and then let's do stuff, you know.
It's not the same as validation dust.
No, it's actually really, it's only real companion is peanut butter and Xbox, you know.
Yes. That's exactly
well it. I suppose I'm generalizing a bit, but I agree with you there.
We actually plan to smoke some of the naughty herb on today's show. Unfortunately, we don't live here, so we can't.
Although, if we stay here for 3 or 4 days, don't we get some rights?
Squatter rights, we do. But I think it's a month.
Is it a month?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Although, if we build a structure, and I'm eyeing out that big yellow couch outside. I could build a structure.
And listen, I've been playing a lot of Fortnite, and there you've got to build structures in pretty quickly, and then build a fort, and then kind of, you know.
But just once every 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we can build a fort in here. I mean, listen, what do you need? Like a sheet?
Yeah, we need a sheet and we need some string and some perhaps string. A dowel stick.
Yes.
And there we go. We are basically Native American Indians.
Yeah. And we need something that we can basically fashion into a spearhead in case we need to hunt.
Wigwam! I love it.
There's actually a joke about that. A red Native American Indian goes to a psychiatrist and he says, you know, one day I feel like TP, one day I feel like a wigwam. And the psychiatrist goes, well, you're too tense.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I kind of wish I had a laugh track there.
Terrible joke.
Fantastic. What have we got instead of a laugh track? I think all we have is this.
Oh. That's the worst sound in the world. Quite literally the worst sound in the world.
I heard a joke from a five-year-old the other day, which I actually found quite funny. Because, you know, a five-year-old's mind works very different. You know, my favorite joke at the moment as an adult is knock, knock.
Who's there?
To
who?
To whom?
Oh, lol.
Yeah, it's a little play on the English language there. But this little five-year-old told me a joke. He said, why do you never give a helium balloon to Elsa from Frozen?
Oh, why? Because it's already too high.
Because she'll let it go. Oh. Yeah. That's awkward. Yeah, Chewbacca sounds, they don't really work with jokes. Eh?
Although they kind of do. They actually, that's kind of like... It's the opposite of laughter.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like when you pain. When you want to sort of criticize someone's joke, you Chewbacca it.
So you and I have a very similar view on Chewbacca. So for those of you who don't know, theatre lovers who are going, I don't know what they're talking about, darling. They're talking about a growly thing, something that's growling. So Chewbacca is obviously from Star Wars.
He's a Wookiee.
He is a Wookiee,
which means he's not a beginner with like an Alma Fudd lisp.
Yeah, well, Wookiee, what we have here.
Yeah,
yeah. If you're not familiar with Star Wars, I don't know if we can be friends. So Graham. I happen to agree with you on this point, and I'm sure a lot of Star Wars fans will absolutely hate this, but I do not understand Chewbacca. I can't. Yeah, I don't see the point of him. They kind of sell him as this big, strong, flipping, hairy.
You know what he is? Do you know what he is? Do you know what he is? Well, do you know what he was?
What was he?
Because, you know, Hans is dead now. Han.
Gareth Cliff is making Wookiee sounds. Oh, he's saying we're not allowed to say Wookiee. No, it's the M word we're not allowed to say.
Hans, he was basically Hans St. Bernard. And every time Han got stuck in a situation, the St. Bernard would come with a little barrel of whiskey, dig him out of the snow, and then shoot his little crossbow and gather other irritating creatures to fly around with him, like in the last movie.
But have you noticed that all he does is get injured?
Yeah.
It's all he does. And I remember my favorite line from Star Wars was, "Quick, Chewie, override the operating system." Yeah. And it's like, what? I don't think Chewbacca knows how to work a computer.
Although, also, listen, okay, Chewbacca pulled off some pretty crazy moves in The Last Jedi.
Did he?
Yeah, I remember that one thing where he shot out of the hole and he kind of, everyone, right at the end when Luke became Luke.
Forgettable.
Yeah. Anyway, with the penguin and the penguin on the dashboard, kind of like a bobblehead thing. And that was my like kind of one moment where I was kind of like, okay, cool. You're kind of cool. You know, you're kind of cool. But I must say, as a character, also, you know, although because he doesn't have dialogue, right? He's just got the sound.
He's okay.
But it doesn't have like a tonal quality. You know, like when you go like, or
yeah, it doesn't match the emotion.
I feel like he was a bit of a cut and paste 80s character that they were like, you know what? We've got this excess hair lying around. Let's make a costume for someone and get them to growl.
But Star Wars fans were justified and be like, well, he's from a different race and they express themselves differently. It's like, Chewbacca, I heard your aunt just died. I'm really sorry to hear that. Yeah. Or Chewbacca, congratulations on your diploma.
Oh no, that was a lion.
Yeah, that was a lion. I think that was MGM trying to slip their logo in there.
That was a lion. Anyway. You see, even the lion had more character, like more emotion in it, in his growl.
It sounded like a real animal. So we're gonna get an actress on the line.
Yeah, let's stop hating on.
Yeah,
Chewbacca.
Sorry, we're gonna stop. Sorry, Star buddy. Warsing you're, for a moment and focus on the show.
Quintessential character.
So this is usually a show all about theater, and that's because Alan Ford has this amazing love for theater, and he goes all the time. And I don't go that often. I wish I did actually, because every time I go to the theater, I'm like, why don't I do this more? And I really think I should. But we're gonna talk to Isabella Sneyman, who was recently in Evita. And
old bells.
Yeah, she was standing in a little nightie with her suitcase and blew everyone
one
away.
One of my favorite up-and-coming. Well, I can't say up-and-coming, although she's is up-and-coming. Yeah. She's come, but really one of the most talented little girls, young women, beautiful ladies on this
The reason Graham's saying little girls is because she's about 4 foot. Too.
But also, I've known her from when she was quite young. So yes. I kind of like still have this image of this little girl. But she's really a bright young woman now.
Yeah. And anyway, this is the show she's currently in. It's called Calling Me Home.
Calling Me Home.
Join us for the world premiere of Calling Me Home, a powerful new musical with an all-star cast including Linnell Kennard, Samantha Peo, and freshly ground Zolani Mahola. Calling Me Home. A story of hope, a story of love, a story of home. Only at Joburg Theatre from 17 August to 3 September.
2017.
Book now at joburgtheatre.com or web tickets.
So that was Calling Me Home last year, right? So it debuted last year. I actually hope this is the same production, because I noticed that this time it's called Calling Us Home, and this was called Calling Me Home. So I'm starting to doubt myself on whether it's the same production, but we'll chat to Isabella just now and see what she has to say about that. Maybe it's hugely embarrassing and I've got the complete wrong production.
That's fine.
So you're in the new hit musical Matilda. Yeah, it's almost the same. But so now Calling Me Home had its fair share of critics and things when it came out last year. Alan Ford spoke to Samantha Pio, who was one of the leads in it. And now we have Isabella. Isabella, are you there?
Hi. I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and you sound wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
How is Cape Town treating you?
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I love Cape Town. It has this thing about it, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm working hard or not, I'm always working hard, by the way, I feel like I'm on holiday.
Yeah, well, it's because I've seen your Instagram and all you've really been doing. You say work, but I've just seen you climbing mountains and frolicking on the beach.
Yeah, I mean,
is that just your Instagram life?
It is just my Instagram life. But the thing is, you know, when you have like a morning, like an hour in the morning, or you have an off day, I'm like, I'm that guy who doesn't sleep. Like, I will go out and I will climb a mountain.
And you will have your shoes stolen by a drug lord.
Yeah, on the dusty.
The last time I was walking Long Street in Cape Town, a guy came up to me and he was like, "You, I want your shoes. I love your shoes. I want your shoes." And I was like, "Thank you very much." And I continued walking. I think he wanted to take them from me. Isabella.
Yes.
I've had some confusion. So yes. Is calling me home the same as calling us home?
It is. Calling Us Home.
It's a rename, a rebrand.
A rebrand. But the show and influence is still the same. The music is still so beautiful. The story has the same vibe. It's just grown and evolved into something bigger and better.
Fantastic. So this is a proudly South Africanly written musical. Yes. It was launched in 2017, last year. And It got quite a lot of criticism from the theatre world, and obviously now they've brought it back, and I'm guessing, have they changed it quite a lot? Did they take people's critiques into account and things?
Yeah, you know, every new musical, in fact, every musical has challenging reviews.
Sure.
That's just something that happens to everyone. I mean, you wouldn't have Lemon's Wicked if they didn't have those challenging reviews in the beginning either, you know?
Yeah.
And we did every single night. We had rolling houses, full houses, standing ovations, smiling faces. And, I mean, we would have people go up to the composer and throw their arms around her crying. And for us, like, that's the most important thing, that our audiences were happy. And as a team and as a cast, that just drove us to be better every night and allow us to grow and evolve into something. And now, of course, we've taken everything into account, what worked, what didn't work, and basically just brought it into this new, refreshed, amazing idea, which is Calling Us Home.
And you were in both, obviously. So have you noticed a difference in, obviously in the role you're playing, and have you noticed a difference in critics critting it this time around?
Yeah, definitely my role has evolved quite a lot, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a featured ensemble role, and it's actually so much fun to play. I mean, I get to sing all the music, which is a bonus because I can't even tell you. It's so nice to sing this music. It is so amazing.
Okay.
But my role changed, and she's fun to play around with. And also, I'm given the freedom to let her grow in the direction that you know, I would like her to go. So I'm able to work one-on-one with directors and the creators and actually, like, make my character come to life in a way that I want it to come to life, which is just really cool to be a part of.
Yeah, and also you're an A-lister now. Like where you did the last run, you were up and coming, and now you're an A-lister, so you can be like...
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yes, sorry. Graham Watkins is in studio with me, and he would like to ask you a question.
Hello, my darling.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, Graham. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I want to find out, how does Rosie feel about you cheating on her with another production?
It is a tough one, you know. It's hard to balance. It's basically like a married life.
I know. You do keep her in a suitcase, though. So I hope you're letting her out on Table Mountain as well. I hope she's with you. If she's not with you, I'm going to be heartbroken.
She is with me. She's actually, this is so bad. She's sitting in my closet. So we actually have to come out of the closet.
When's she coming out?
Yeah, are you guys coming out together? That'll be exciting.
We have to come out together.
Oh, well, congrats on your on everything. Hey, fantastic, my angel.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And how's your head doing with all that Bible bashing?
Yes, very good. Thank you. I'm almost healed. I look a bit like Harry Potter, though. I have a zigzag on my right hand side.
But I saw a photo of you this morning. I'm like, oh
it's all good. It's all good. I feel much better.
So for that, Graham needs to tell that story. We'll get him to tell that story.
I'll tell you the story later.
A little bit later.
Yeah.
Isabella, when can people see Calling Us Home?
On the 14th of October at Artscape Theatre.
14th of October at Artscape Theatre. Is it coming back to Joburg? Or are you guys happy down there? You like the rest of Cape Town. We're never going to Johannesburg again.
Listen, I think for the moment we're happy here in Cape Town, I love Cape Town. But here's a bit of a giveaway. So remember in Ibiza I had the suitcase, another suitcase in another hall, naturally.
Yes, and inside that suitcase was Rosie, probably.
Yeah, probably. They didn't let me do it. Anyways, here's a giveaway. In one of the scenes, I hold a suitcase in this show. And it made me realize that it never leaves you.
The suitcase.
When you sing a song 200 times, you know, it's there always. So now I have a suitcase in the show too.
But now do you run into that problem where, flip, I'm holding a suitcase, I better sing the right song? Because
you have the whole cast. I mean, people just come up to me and be like, so what happened now? And I'm like, oh, here we go.
Shame. Oh, well, I hope you can unpack that suitcase one day and settle down.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to settle down.
Do you want to settle down or are you happy with the traveling life? Because, I mean, you were in Tokyo, you were in all over Asia, now you're in Cape Town.
The bug hit me, hey, that travel bug. Oh, it hit me hard.
Well, you're in the right career then, because I have a feeling you're going to have a huge international career. You have up and come. And yeah, man, we just want to wish you all the best and all the best for Calling Me Home, which is coming on the 14th of October. I just choked on my own breath at the Artscape Theatre. So go get your tickets. All right, is there a preview night or a media night or anything? We've lost her.
We've lost her, but we got what we needed from
her.
She
was distracted by a mountain. Oh, well.
All right.
It happens in Cape Town.
It does. The mountain often falls on.
For anyone who doesn't understand what was going on when Graham was talking about Rosie and someone in a suitcase and someone coming out of a closet, this is what Isabella is, what kind of broke into the industry with.
It's a cappuccino! Oh. What? The fresh judge is here in Italy? No.
I think this is more confusing for the listener.
Rosie. Yeah, they're like, what is going on? So she's a ventriloquist as well.
And please, what's with the Italian?
The French judge followed me to Sorrento!
Rosie!
Yeah, so she's a ventriloquist, which should probably explain.
Yes.
Just sounds like someone screeching in a high-pitched voice.
Yes.
Yeah, so Isabella and Rosie are a couple. One is made of cloth, one is made of beautiful creamy skin.
Yes.
So that is what Graham was talking about. Graham, how are you? We haven't even really spoken to you. Tell us the story about you being Bible bashed.
Yes, I was playing with my two boys. We're getting them ready. They just got out of the bath and I was getting the one dressed and he was sort of reluctantly, you know, fighting me on the shirt that he was going to wear. He wanted this one, and I said, no, you should wear this one. Was a little bit cold. Anyway, so I tried to get it on him, and then I whacked him with it. I was like, come on now. And he grabbed it, and giggling, he whacked me back. When the little two-year-old, which I wasn't aware of.
And then
was,
you fell to the ground like a transformer.
So we were playing, and then I kind of jumped into the bed, not realizing that the two-year-old was behind me and saw the whacking. And decided that he was going to whack me with something else. And then threw a Bible at my head.
Oh, my goodness.
And it split my forehead open. And now I look a bit like Harry Potter.
So he was like, da-da.
In fact, Chewbacca is
An apt description
of your description of my 2-year-old. Yes, wow. They're actually the same person. They're the same size as well.
Same amount of hair.
Same amount of hair. Only wow. He's blonde and Chewbacca's a brunette.
Yeah, so he's like an Aryan
Chewbacca.
Wookiee. An Air Wookiee. Well, so now you have a Harry Potter scar.
I'm a Harry Potter, cool. Wingardium Leviosa.
Yes. How do you? How's music going? How do you feel about music?
Yeah, music's going well. I think the industry's in an ever changing space, and the world music is changing all the time now as well. And I think it's interesting to see where music is. Music is in a strange place. Like, for example, like, why is the internet riddled with songs that don't necessarily make any sense?
I don't know what you're talking about, Graham. The internet is full of songs with deep spiritual meaning.
I can't agree with you there.
Can I play you a hit from 2016?
Play me a spiritual hit.
Okay, here is a spiritual hit from 2016. Internet famous.
Sounds like a horse.
Look at my horse. My horse is amazing. Give it a lick. A stroke of its mane, it turns into a plane, and then it turns back again when you tug on its wing care. Do you think so? Well, I better not show you where the lemonade is made. Sweet lemonade.
Sweet here comes the deep part. Are you ready for the deepness? Yeah, listen to the lyrics. After this musical break.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Get on my horse, I'll take you around the universe and
sure. It's like we can't walk down any roads without some sexism coming out, eh?
You know what?
Said, shut up, woman, get on my horse. That's something you cannot say in 2018.
You definitely, but to be honest with you, not many of us are riding our horses around the streets in 2018.
That is true.
It might have been okay in the 1800s.
So don't you agree that that song is quite beautiful? I mean, the lyrics are, you know, get on my horse. This is my horse. My horse is amazing. With the pat of its mane, it turns into a flame.
Lick my horse to taste like a raisin.
Yes, to turn it back, just touch its winky. Yeah, it's deep on a different level. I mean, obviously the biggest hit of this year is probably this number.
Oh, I know it.
You do know it.
So does my son. He knows all the words, all the actions, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kind of reminds me of like
it's like The Apprentice.
Baby shark do 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 do. Baby shark do 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 do. Baby shark do 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 do. Baby shark.
Anyway, that's enough of that. That's in everyone's head now. No, Graham, stop it.
I'm harmonizing. Yes. I know the harmonies already. I can compart like a 5-part harmony to that song.
So this is like probably the biggest hit that's gone around. Hey? This and Kiki, because people kept getting out of their cars and being hit by other cars.
Yeah.
How do we survive as musicians in this world of Baby Shark and This Is My Horse and Kiki?
Do you know what, Bad? If you look at all three of those examples you've just given me, right? Okay, I saw the video that you were playing now with the look at my horse, the horse is amazing, and that's it. It sticks in your head straight away. So look, apart from the fact that it's just like it's hook material, everything, Baby Shark, so simple, but it also it's accompanied by a visual aspect. Like This Is My Horse is like a great video as well. It's like a funny.
Baby Shark has the actions.
Baby Shark has the actions. Hey Kiki, there's an action of getting out of the car, and that became viral before the song sort of, it like kind of, they both aided each other. So it just needs something ridiculous to accompany it. So that makes you think about like, are there serious songs in the world?
But are we
I
not
suppose
worried?
Adele or Sam Smith gave us all of the serious songs last
and
year.
Now the world needs a pick-me-up.
Now the world needs a small reprieve.
But are we not worried about the fact that these nursery rhymes basically are mostly naughty nursery rhymes? They're becoming like pop music. I mean, are there still deep songs? Because you listen to like some of the hits on radio as well, and there's just zero meaning there. You know.
Okay, but let's go back to
the medieval days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take Ring a Ring a Rosie, for example, okay?
Yes.
Ring a Ring a Rosie, a pocket full of posy, a tissue, we all fall down, okay? That comes from that era, okay?
Yeah, but that was quite deep because it was actually talking about the Black Plague.
Talking about the Black Plague, yeah. And if you sing it within that context with like some creepy children and lots of reverb in a dark room, it suddenly becomes a little bit creepy, you know? But then sung by a two-year-old by itself, ring, and they're all jumping around. So I suppose it's going to be context. Will Baby Shark in 250 years be a smash hit with the kids back then? I don't think so.
And some philosophy student is going to be like, no, but you know, the deeper meaning behind Baby Shark is it's actually a commentary on the nuclear family. You see, it's Baby Shark, Mommy Shark, Daddy Shark, Grandma Shark, Grandpa Shark. And because Daddy and Mommy Shark have been divorced and left the child broken, that's why they go hunting do-do-do-do-do.
Yes.
Yes. I think that's yeah, probably what's going to happen.
Look, I suppose in anything you can justify it. You can find some hidden esoteric meaning in anything, really, if you look hard enough.
Have you found that you've watered down your songwriting to try fit into today's crazes?
You know, believe it or not, hey, I've written a couple of songs that are like kind of archived that are like so vomity. I was just kind of like, you know, it's cut and paste and there's no soul in it at all. However, like sometimes when I play it back and I'm like, should I give this one a stab? I'm like, there's actually something in there. Hey? So maybe that's a secret. Maybe you should stop caring, because I sometimes overthink my stuff and then it never gets out. You know,
I think a lot of musicians do, and it turns them into bitter old musicians. I mean, I've met a bunch
of. It does make you a bit bitter, I suppose. You know. But then again, we live in a society where perhaps I need to check my ID and go, maybe you're just not relevant anymore.
Sure. Are you getting old, Graham?
I feel...
Is the white on the sides of your head real? It's not
look,
just
I'm,
Dr. Strange.
I'm salty and peppery all in the same can. In fact, I'm very soon just to be coarse salt. That's me.
Wow.
But I'm actually okay with that. I'm cool. I'm actually...
Have you made
like
peace with the fact that you're old AF?
Maybe I've got a new journey ahead of me. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, retirement.
No, I don't think I'll ever retire. I don't think I can retire. I'm definitely somebody that needs to be active all the time. I need to stimulate my brain, whether it be by, you know, doing carpentry or building or drawing or
yes,
crafting.
Drawing. You should write your own comic book.
I should.
You should write. I think you've got some great ideas. You know who else has some great ideas? Ray Witcher. Ray Witcher,
hi.
Are you there?
That would be me. I am there. Hello.
How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good, and you, Nathan?
Awesome. So for the people listening, Ray Witcher is a comic book artist.
Yes.
Who has written his own comic called Wanton. Yes. And you were one of the kind of organizers behind Comic Con. I know you've always got a finger in that pie. Oh, that line is terrible, Ray. Can you stand on a hill? Can you climb Northcliff Hill?
Suck your finger and put it in the air.
Yeah. Change your service provider. So Ray, what he was saying was he was at the Artist Alley, and he's always at the Artist Alley, that rage at Comic-Con, which even though it's the first one, he's always there. He has been there all the time. And he was at Rage. I know he organizes the Artist Alley a lot of the time, so he gets all the artists to come in. And
but how hard must that be? Starting up a new comic as a new artist,
oh,
that must be so difficult.
And we know how much money artists have, you know, and now you need to go and print it and distribute it, which is the most expensive part of the whole process.
That's where you go and photocopy everything.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but his is in color. He's even got proper things. Ray, do we have you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Ah, there you are. Sorry, man. We lost you thanks to your service provider, which is not providing any service.
I literally work in a building that's made out of lead, so signal's normally quite bad.
Ah, so Superman can't see through it and Vodacom can't get out.
Pretty much.
Gotcha. So, yes, so you were telling us about Comic-Con. How were you involved?
Yes, so I was kind of more of a pseudo organizer. So they brought me on as an advisor to help with stuff like the local comic scene and the Artist Alley and that sort of thing. Because I've been running Artist Alleys for a very, very long time. So they just wanted to make sure that everything was working well that side.
Oh, man. And it did work so well. I loved that Artist Alley. It was so amazing to see the stuff that people are coming up with.
you know, in my totally unbiased opinion, it was my favorite part of the show, even though it was the only part of the show I actually got to see. So.
Shem, did you miss? Oh, no, you didn't miss everything. I saw you on the Disenchanted Jumping Castle beating your wife.
Yeah, that was pretty much the only thing I got to do, actually.
Shit. But I mean, like some of the comics that were coming out. I mean, not in the artist alley, but in the kind of shopping area at Comic Con, I saw there were a comic book which I was excited and angry at the same time. I had a character that I came up with a while ago called Sergeant South Africa, and I saw they'd launched a comic book called Sergeant South Africa. The outfit is exactly the same. I was like blown away, but I was actually quite excited about it because I was like, I wasn't going to do anything with that idea. I'm glad someone did.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, there's also a Sergeant South Africa as well. So they're kind of going around. And the Sergeant South Africa is drawn by Bill Masuku, who's a Zimbabwean artist.
Yeah.
And then Captain South Africa is actually from BB Comics, which is actually a 702 DJ's work. So
oh, wow.
It's quite interesting.
So basically, I need to come up with Brigadier South Africa.
Corporal.
What's the highest rank?
Yeah.
General.
Or Lieutenant
Major.
South Africa.
And so how was Comic-Con for you as an artist? Because you obviously exhibited your own art there as well. You have your comic book called Wanton, and you were selling it there. How was it?
It actually went so incredibly well. The one of the things that really amazed me was just how willing people were to support them. Because we have no exposure, basically, because our stuff's not in the shops. We're not in movies and that kind of thing. So
why is that? Why isn't it in the shops? I mean, is it too expensive to get in a shop, or how? Why?
There are a lot of financial issues actually affecting, and the most important thing is how expensive it is to actually print comics.
Okay.
And so we try our best, but at the most we could normally print. Like I managed to print about 200 comics for Comic Con, and that was very expensive.
Yeah.
So I kind of needed the budget, and that's the problem is we don't have the ability to mass market and that sort of thing. There are some exceptions. So comics like Shark Arising and Quasi have actually managed to get publishers, and they're actually helping with distribution and marketing, and it's been going very well for them.
But
it's actually very impressive.
Is it not a case of taking your comic book to a comic book store and saying, can you just put this on the shelf with the other stuff? I'll even give it to you for free.
they often hesitate because the problem is people don't know our stuff. So they can say, hey, look at the South African comic, but then you see Spider-Man next to it and you go, oh, I want Spider-Man rather. So that's always been a bit of a catch. They're competing with stuff that's been very established.
Well, why don't you do a 2-for-1? Buy Spider-Man and get my comic at a reduced price.
That's an option. But I know as well that your comic is also, it comes in Vanak as well, which is great.
It does indeed. Yeah, my characters actually speak Sotho to each other because they're a pair of Sangoma. So I've always believed that when you read a comic, especially a South African comic, why should everyone speak English?
Yeah.
It's kind of silly. So mm-hmm. my big dream was to actually have a comic where people speak in the languages they should be speaking. And yes, there's still translations at the back of the book. But at the my big, maybe naive goal is to actually have a comic that feels South African, looks South African, and speaks South African.
Yeah, I fell in love with a French comic called Black Cat, or Black Sad.
Oh, Black Sad, yeah.
And,
that's a lovely comic.
And it was so beautiful, and I was just taken away by the art more than anything, and I didn't understand a word of it, but I love it to this day.
But that's an absolute classic, though.
Yeah, it is. If you're into anthropomorphic art, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Awesome, Ray. Thanks so much for chatting to us. Is Comic-Con happening again? What's happening? I mean, obviously they sold out, so I'm pretty sure one's going to be like, oh, I don't know if we should try it again.
Yeah, they've actually already released a press announcement that they are very much happening next year.
Brilliant.
I'm not sure if it's at the same venue, but it's definitely confirmed to be happening again.
Fantastic. Graham and I will get our costumes ready. Maybe our cosplayers one time.
I'm going to start sewing right now.
Excellent. Yeah, I've got quite a few interesting characters for you to do so. So I think it'll be great because you guys looked amazing in your cosplays. So I'm looking forward.
Stop with the flattery.
Oh, do go on.
Awesome. Thank you, Ray. Thank you so much for chatting to us, buddy. We are running out of time of the show, so I have to let you go, my man. But you have a job, go back to that. Go get that doctorate. He's gone. He's gone to get the doctorate. Amazing.
He got the doctorate.
Wow.
He got.
You know, he's studying a doctorate in cartoons and comic art, which
really?
Is quite amazing.
Yeah,
I'm a doctor of cartoons.
He sounds like a... I just love the fluidity at which he speaks and like the passion at which he speaks, and it's great. I mean, when you're in something, you know, although comics are kind of a worldwide phenomenon, it's still quite a niche thing. And like I say again, trying to start a new comic,
jeez, yeah,
crumbs, it must be the hardest thing. You heard what he said. People will rather go for, it's like the music industry, people will rather go and buy an Adele versus
something that other people have spoken about.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's like that Rotten Apples, or what's it called? Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes, yeah.
It's kind of like that, you know, where people sort of will take the word of a review over their own opinion
of it. Yeah, they won't go check it
which
out
is,
themselves.
Which
yeah.
is sometimes quite a dangerous thing. Look, sometimes it really is, yeah, it was terrible. But yeah, sometimes you're like, actually, I enjoyed that more than the review gave
it. There's a lot
for.
Of things that the reviewers have hated that I've absolutely loved. I mean, what is that big Zack Snyder movie of Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am? It was something, I can't even remember the name of it now, but I loved the film, but it was slated on by every critic, and I think actually because they didn't understand it. But yeah, Rotten Tomatoes dictates like how movies do, because they release their reviews 2 weeks before a film comes out.
Yeah, that's right.
And then if it gets a low rating, people are like, oh yeah, I'm not going to waste the money. But I understand, because you don't want to go waste money. But if you're like a fan of the genre, like I'm a big fan of the superhero genre, I will go watch the
Venom.
Superhero
well, like,
movie.
They rated Venom. It wasn't
yeah,
very good.
They
hey?
Rated Venom 29%, which is very low. And, you know, and then obviously like a movie like Crazy Rich Asians gets a very high review.
Mm.
And I mean, I haven't seen that yet. But to be honest, I don't think I would enjoy it. It's like a location oh. rom-com.
It makes you think though, like, is it just one guy like Barry Ronger doing all the genres?
Yeah. Or is I it think like this movie deserves a scintillating six.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, does is there somebody who's like kind of like, you know, a fiction specific reviewer, or a drama specific, or a rom-com specific, or is it somebody with a very broad palette of, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is a collection of reviewers.
Or do you think it's somebody who's like having a really bad day and like, oh, I hated it.
Yeah,
my popcorn
well, that's
was
the
cold.
Thing. I mean, I've seen movies that I've hated, and then the second time around, Zoolander, when that first came out, hated it, but the second time, loved it.
No, you see, I did the opposite. I watched Zoolander, and I was just like, it's probably one of the most brilliant, best movies I've ever seen, just in terms of like what they were trying to do with the characters.
Yeah.
So again, we have just proven we've just proven our point.
That people are different.
People are different.
So if something gets a rotten review and you enjoyed it, that's fine.
That's
you're allowed
fine
it.
Because it's one person's perspective
yes.
and opinion.
I think we need to leave it at that, Gray.
Is
thank
that
you
it?
So much for being in studio.
No, I don't want to go.
I know
let's
you
continue.
Don't want to go.
Let's just carry on talking when we're
but
off
we need
air.
To play out with a This Is My Horse, I think.
I think so too.
Or another great internet classic, Seagulls. Have you heard Seagulls?
No.
Okay, this will tie up the show nicely because we spoke about Star Wars. We spoke about Calling Us Home, which you can get tickets for. Opens at Artscape Theatre on the 14th of October. We spoke about Comic-Con, and this is the best one. Graham Watkins, thank you so much for being my guest in the studio. Alan Ford, thank you for not being here so that we could talk about what we want to talk about. This is The Unview. The thin, the rich, and the...
Penny for your thoughts.
I hate Brenda, and a bad guy hit me in the shin, and I peed all in my pants.
It's nothing a little music can't help.
This is CliffCentral.com.